February at the state capitol featured a series of developments involving the Flint water crisis. Emails released last week revealed top Snyder administration officials were concerned about the situation in the fall of 2014. Their concern did not reach the governor. And with possible insolvency looming for the Detroit Public Schools, Michigan House Republicans weighed in with a controversial plan for the district's future. To discuss those and more, we welcome this month's Capitol reporters. Kyle Malin is editor and vice president of Lansing's MERS newsletter. Hello, Kyle.
Good morning.
And Alethea Kasbin focuses on the State House for Gongwer News. Hi, Alethea.
Hi.
There were at least two more analyses this month of Snyder administration emails. Let's revisit the more recent one that really broke just this last Friday. They got pretty comprehensive coverage in the media. Alethea, what did we learn from that?
Well, the main thing we learned is that these top officials had concerns about Flint pretty early on. Valerie Brader, Michael Godola, who are were top legal counsel to the governor, and they expressed concerns. And it's unclear, or they say that they didn't bring them to the governor.
And many people are wondering how this pair of high-level people in the administration could have these concerns and for the governor not to be aware of them. Kyle, what's been the fallout to the emails here since Friday?
Well, I think the Democrats have raised a lot of questions about it, and how could the governor not know this major situation that was developing in Flint when everybody else, it seemed like under him, did know. And so Democrats have been extremely critical about his what they believe is mismanagement of state government. And the governor himself has said he kicks himself every day for not having done something about it sooner. But it's given more grist for the mill, if you will, and additional calls for the Democrats to have some type of FOIA reform in state government so that the governor's emails are subject to the Freedom of Information Act as opposed to him just giving them out to the media when he feels like it.
What's the FOIA conversation like in the House, Alethea? Is it does it have legs?
Well, right now it's unclear if it has legs. I think the oversight chair, Ed McBroom, he's a Republican from the UP, has expressed some interest in possibly doing some reforms, but mostly it's been only on the Democratic side where they want the legislature and the governor's office to be subject to FOIA.
Also, just last week, we learned of another review of the Flint water emergency. A joint House and Senate committee is being set up. It will be looking at what exactly?
It will be looking at what sort of policy changes can be made to possibly prevent something like this happening in the future. The Republican Speaker, Kevin Cotter, has been adamant that it is not an investigative committee. It's going to be an oversight committee.
Was there any resistance for another investigation, Kyle?
There was, I think, and I think it's obvious by the fact that it took so long for it to come. I think what the Republicans didn't want to have happen was a situation where they were eating their own. They were eating the Republican governor's administration and making him look even worse than what he does right now. And I think what has happened now, I think the tack that they're taking is, well, there's plenty of investigations. There's some at the federal level. The Auditor General had one, even though that one looks like that's wrapping up. The Attorney General's got one. And then the Governor's own task force, yeah, that's still out there, the
right.
Ken Sikkema, Chris Cobe report. We still haven't gotten that yet. And so they just didn't want to be duplicative here. They didn't want to add another layer of investigation. So they've kind of taken this attitude that we are going to take a look at all the investigations and see if there's any legislation that needs to take place. I think it's interesting that it happened now when it appeared at first that there wasn't going to be one at all. And then the thought was, we'll wait till all the investigations come in and then we'll do it. But I think that the heat on the burner got a little too high, and they realized they better not be horribly late for the party, and they went ahead and established one anyway.
There was a clear difference of opinion regarding the importance of subpoena power on this committee. Let's quickly hear from both sides from just last week. Democratic State Senator Jim Ananick says subpoena power is important.
When people come and say things that are knowingly untrue, as has been happening the last 7 months, they're going to want to have that subpoena power. And I'm going to have the resolution ready.
And on the other side of the aisle, Republican Senator Jim Stamos.
I don't think that we need to have subpoena power. Again, this is not an investigation. This is an oversight. How do we make sure we improve the process? How do we make sure we're taking care of Michigan?
There's the distinction you mentioned, Alethea. An oversight, not an investigation. Is that a serious distinction here?
Well, it is when you think about if the governor came in and spoke under oath because he was subpoenaed. If it's just an oversight committee, people can choose whether or not they come. They are saying that they're not going to put them under oath when they testify. So it is a big difference, I think.
Will the Republican majority kill the subpoena option, Kyle?
I don't know if they really need to have the subpoena option. You know, at the congressional level, it looks like there is an interest in digging more into the what happened. Where I think that what the Republican Legislature Committee is looking at doing is what can we do going forward and taking a look at what comes out from the Attorney General's report or what comes out of whatever happens at the U.S. Prosecutor's Office or the U.S. Attorney's Office, rather. The Postal Office apparently has some type of look-see into this, too. And so, yeah, I don't really see the subpoena issue coming into play here because I don't see them hauling folks in and having them declare under oath to testify to what exactly happened. I don't think that's where the focus is on this.
Do we know about a timeline, Alethea? Do we know when hearings are scheduled to begin? Any idea?
I think what they're doing is they're waiting for some of these reports to come out, and then they'll start looking at them in the committee.
Twice this month, the State Board of Canvassers approved petitions that call for the removal of Governor Snyder. Interestingly, only one of these two involved the Flint water crisis. Kyle, can you talk to us about these two approved petitions? What were in these?
Well, you know, this had been a very long and drawn-out process. Let me just say that, Mark, for your listeners' benefit. They've had several Board of Canvasser meetings here where there have been dozens of petition language that has been submitted. However, due to the state law on what can be in there, it had to be of a factual nature. It couldn't be opinion. And so that stymied nearly all of the language. And so the first bit of language that actually got approved had to do with the signing of an executive order that had nothing to do with Flint at all. But it was something that the canvassers couldn't throw out because it actually stated a factual fact that cannot be disputed, that Governor Snyder had signed this particular executive order on this particular day, period. So that finally was able to break the logjam. You know, they had tried all sorts of different things with Flint, like statements he made during the State of the State address, which I thought was particularly crafty. What he said as part of his email exchanges, which we talked about earlier in this show. Again, a lot of that was subjective as well. They finally were able to crack one thing about Flint in regards to his connection with that. And so they'll have two ballot questions that they have at their disposal in order to work with. You know, the real question is if anybody's going to put any money into this whatsoever to try and get this off the ground. Because to collect the 13,000 signatures a day for 60 straight days, which is what they're going to need, it's going to take a little bit more than a couple dozen volunteers and $1 million.
We'll point out that the first petition approved earlier this month seeks to remove Governor Snyder over his decision last year to take control of the state office to reform schools. Organizers say that disregards local prerogatives, and the second one concerns the state of emergency that was declared in Genesee County. Let's listen to Reverend David Bullock, who is the lead organizer of the Flint recall petition.
There has to be accountability for the Flint water crisis, for the emergency management disaster. Emergency management is Rick Snyder's signature urban policy. He has to own it.
And this brings to 29 total recall petitions filed with the Board of State Canvassers. Some of those predate the Flint water crisis, we should add, but 2 out of 29. Kyle, what accounts for so few recall petitions getting approval?
Well, again, it was just that so many of them were subjective in nature. They weren't a factual statement. There was opinion that was laced in them and was leading or could arguably lead somebody who is going to sign it into a particular direction. And that's not, the state law is extremely clear that what you have to put on there for a reason for recalling somebody is a factual statement. In the past, when lawmakers have seen their recall language against them approved, it is because they voted yes or they voted no on a certain bill on a certain date. I mean, that's a factual piece of information that is indisputable. It's when you start trying to describe that legislation, or in this case, the governor, you start trying to describe what he did and your perception of what he did is you're going to get into trouble 100% of the time.
It is Current State's Month in Review for the month of February. Our guests are Kyle Malin of MERS News and Alethea Kasbin of Gongwer News. The legislature also approved $30 million of state money to help pay for the bills of Flint water customers. Alethea, how did this unfold exactly?
Well, this $30 million is to cover about 65% of Flint customers' water bills, the idea being it's only to cover the drinking water portion. It did pass unanimously in both chambers, but Democrats still said that they did not think that $30 million was enough, that all the water bills should be covered. If this water is contaminated, the residents of Flint shouldn't have to pay for any of it.
Kyle, what'd you make of the of that particular measure?
Well, I thought it was a good gesture, and I think it just shows that the governor is willing to go about, I think Alethea is right, about 65% of the way here. When I think the residents of Flint would like to see them go 100% of the way. They want to see all of the water bill taken care of. Why separate the sewer out of this? You know, if we can't use the water, we can't use the water. And residents have racked up considerable bills using water or, turning on the faucet and it coming out anyway and then not being able to drink it or use it for cooking or fearing that when they bathe with it, they're going to get rashes on their face and on their bodies. And so they say, all right, so we've worked up a significant amount of debt on our part on this. Why shouldn't it all be taken care of? You know, so that it doesn't seem like he can go far enough in the eyes of the folks there in Flint. And, you know, maybe that's justified, maybe it's not. But that is the perception out there that, you know, why can't we just get these all cleared off the slate here? And if it wasn't because of lead, it was because of other things, fecal coliform or whatever was in the water, whatever was making it yellow, nasty looking, smelly looking, whatever it was. Why haven't we having to, you know, not get the whole slate clean on this?
With regard to the $30 million going to Flint to cover the water bills, this triggers an interesting question that I'll put out there with both of you right now. This was asked in the first pundit poll from Matt Resch and Dennis Denno that we discussed a week ago on this problem. The question they posed for all of their pundits all across the state was, how long will legislative bipartisan support for Flint aid last in Michigan? I'd just like to get both of your takes on this. Do you expect we'll see a parting of the ways at some point? Will measures like what we've seen so far start to generate more resistance, Alethea?
You know, it's hard to say. I guess a lot of it depends on how much money eventually goes toward Flint. There could maybe be some resistance if it's just it seems like it's constantly millions and millions of dollars going there. Maybe Democrats eventually will say, you know, the gesture isn't enough. We want more. So it's I'm not sure on that one.
Kyle, what do you think?
Well, I was inclined to say no until we did our own poll just this past week, in which we asked Republican presidential primary voters who they blame for the Flint water crisis. And 53% of Republicans blame either the city or the county government, so more than half. So what that tells me is that among the Republican legislature's own base, that a majority of them don't feel like this is Governor Snyder. They don't feel like this is state government. And then when we ask the question of what the governor should do about this emergency, only 14% of Republican primaries, it's just Republican, mind you, but only 14 said that he should resign. Mm. And 51% said he should lead. But listen to this, though, Mark. 17% said he should do nothing, and 18% were undecided or unsure. So to get to your question, then, is there going to be a parting of the ways here at some point? I would say the answer is yes. Because I think you're already seeing, based on these poll results, that the public in the Republican end of things, and the Republicans do control the legislature and the governor's office right now, are starting to say, okay, the governor's apologized. They're already putting money into Flint. We've got other communities in the state that have similar infrastructure problems, and while we feel horrible for the folks in Flint, at a certain time, there is a cap, there is a ceiling. You know, this isn't an endless spigot of money, and there will come a time when there will be enough. And I think as far as Democrats are concerned, I don't think that there will ever be enough. I don't think there is enough money that you can put. You can put money into education. You can put money into health for the folks up there. You can continue to give them water. You can fix the infrastructure. You can put in lead pipe or pipes that are not made of lead, plastic pipes into the ground. But at a certain point, Mark, there's going to be a cap on the money, and I'm going to put it down here right now that the Democrats will always contend that it is not enough.
We will transition out of the Flint portion here of this segment by mentioning Governor Snyder is scheduled to appear in Washington before the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee on Thursday, March 17th. That is 2 weeks from this Thursday. Let's shift gears here. House Republicans this month proposed a measure to address the very serious challenges faced by the Detroit public schools. It resembles a Senate measure up to a point, but it goes farther. Kyle, remind us what's in this House proposal that's generating the talk.
Well, this House proposal is very similar, like you said, to the Senate proposal, but there's a couple key differences, one of which has to do with how long the state is going to continue to oversee Detroit public schools. The House proposal has the state looking over the school district's shoulder for 8 years, which is not acceptable to the folks in the city of Detroit. And it also allows teachers to be hired into Detroit public schools without having a regular teaching certificate. So they don't have to go through that regular process, which obviously the teachers union is not excited about at all. They feel like they're just kind of getting the scrapes in the bottom of the barrel here if you can't get real teachers in there. Why is Detroit different in this? Why are we the laboratory again? Why are we the lab rats again? And so you're getting a lot of pushback on this for those reasons.
Gary Nayert is the pro-school choice, pro-charter school, is with the pro-charter school organization, the Great Lakes Education Project. He offered his take on those features of the bill here on Current State. Here he is from a week and a half ago.
What the House Republicans are saying is, in exchange for a $715 million taxpayer-funded bailout of the existing DPS, and also which also includes a couple hundred million in seed money for the new district, in exchange for that tremendous financial investment, they want in return some fiscal changes and some academic changes in exchange. That's what it's called. You know, compromise, and it's called give and take.
Alethea, is it fair to say then the House is more interested in retaining control of the district to make sure that these hundreds of millions of dollars headed to Detroit are accounted for?
Yeah, you know, what the Republicans in the House are saying is, you know, $715 million, which is what they're proposing giving to the district, is a lot of money, and they don't want to be back here in 3 to 5 years. And I would add a couple of other things that are in their proposal are some limits to collective bargaining. And on the academic side, there's a pretty intense literacy program and an A through F school grading for each school, which are two things that have tried to go statewide but haven't gotten the support to go to every district in the state. But in this plan, they want them for the new DPS district.
I'd like to close the segment by talking about this incredible presidential year that we've been watching unfold all over the state. It comes to Michigan next week. Super Tuesday is, of course, tomorrow. Kyle, what do you make of the presidential race here in a minute or so?
Well, I would say that Donald Trump has done an amazing job right now getting himself a strong plurality in polls across the country and states on Super Tuesday. As I was taking a look at polls yesterday, it looks like Ted Cruz has a shot in Texas. Looks like he also has a shot maybe in Oklahoma. Marco Rubio had, I guess, one lead in one old poll in the state of Minnesota. But other than that, it's all Trump all the time.
You expect Trump to take Michigan then?
Yes.
Alethea, what do you make of the race?
You know, it it seems like Trump is gonna get it. I don't see how he doesn't get the nomination at this point.
And we have both. We have Bernie Sanders coming to East Lansing on
Wednesday.
Are either of you attending either of the debates?
Yes, I am scheduled to go to the Republican one.
I am as well.
Okay, very good. Two for the Republicans, mm-hmm. and we will see who makes it through. Of course, we got the Democrats in Flint coming up on Sunday as well. We want to thank both of our guests here for stirring up everything that happened in our 29-day month of February. Alethea Kasbin covers the Michigan House for Gongmer News. Kyle Malin is editor and vice president of Lansing's MERS newsletter. Alethea, Kyle, thanks very much.
Thank you, Mark.